Hey everybody, thanks for hitting the download button on the Mania Mania podcast. Joey and I have had a really fun time reliving some of the best and worst moments from the WrestleMania's past, and we want to include you in the fun for upcoming episodes, so send us an email with your best and worst moments of any future WrestleMania that we haven't covered yet to mymaniamania@gmail.com, and we'll include your thoughts and your comments in our next podcast. So please keep hitting the download button, subscribe to iTunes, and enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Mania Mania!
Welcome to Mania Mania 10. It is the 10th anniversary that we've been doing this. I am your host, Terry, the bad guy Catlett, here as always, with my faithful tag team partner, Jway, the beast from the East, Holt.
Yeah.
And we are here today to review for you WrestleMania 10. Now, we've done 10 of these. Mm-hmm. WrestleMania is now 10 years old at this point.
Yeah.
I think they finally have a handle on the production of this thing.
Like, yeah.
This was a smooth-running machine. Not too much weird fancy stuff, mm-hmm. but it was still really good. And this is our first WrestleMania without Hulk Hogan.
Yes.
How did that feel for you?
I didn't even really notice it.
Not at all until
like 80% of the way through. I'm like, wait a minute, where's Hogan?
Right.
And then I remembered. I'm like, oh yeah.
We haven't had an unnecessary promo.
Yep.
Or a video montage.
Yeah. Or somebody trying to steal someone's thunder.
Well, a lot has happened between WrestleMania 9 and WrestleMania 10. What has been going on in the world of WWF in that 1 year span?
Well, Hulk Hogan has defected to WCW.
Now he was already there at this point. Yeah.
Yes. At this point, he was there. Vince McMahon and him had, I think there was a contract coming up, and then Vince was like, I don't think you're worth it anymore.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so then he let Hogan go down to WCW.
What, and was this also kind of on the heels of the steroid scandal? Because I do remember that Hulk Hogan did testify. I mean,
yeah.
he didn't obviously volunteer,
right.
But he testified and kind of sunk the ship a little bit. So maybe that kind of factored into it a little.
I would imagine so.
There was a necessary kind of parting of the ways at this point as to maybe Hulk's value.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's down at WCW. And so now we really get to, because one of the points we made at the last one is that there's this kind of underbelly of superstars that really haven't had the chance to kind of take the mantle because we've been kind of keeping these old dogs in it for so long.
Yeah.
The last WrestleMania, we saw Hulk just kind of get a schmoz title for no reason.
Right.
But now we finally get to see like this kind of these new superstars come up and take the main event status.
Yeah. Like, and I think after the whole steroid scandal, Vince wanted to prove that like not all my guys are steroid users.
Right.
So then you're like Shawn Michaels, who's definitely smaller than Hogan is, and then Bret Hart, Owen Hart, you know, all these guys that are a lot smaller. Started to get the spotlight.
Okay, yeah, exactly. So what are the big angles kind of going into this WrestleMania?
Okay, coming into the WrestleMania, the two biggest angles was Lex Luger. In the 1994 Royal Rumble, Lex Luger and Bret Hart simultaneously eliminated each other at the Royal Rumble.
Okay.
So they tied for the victory of the Royal Rumble. So usually when you win the Royal Rumble, you get a championship match.
Okay.
But since they tied, they had to figure out what they were going to do. So on an episode of Raw, it was going to be a coin toss. If Luger won the coin toss, then he was going to face Yokozuna first,
right?
And then Brett would face the winner of that match.
Okay.
And then vice versa if Brett won the coin toss. So if Brett lost the coin toss, he had to face Owen Hart.
Okay.
And then if Luger lost the coin toss, he was going to face Crush. So that everybody had two matches on the card.
I see.
So
okay.
That nobody had an unfair advantage.
All right. And so we also, because this has a couple of kind of legendary matches in it.
Yes.
We also have the feud, or I don't know, was it a feud between Shawn Michaels and Scott Hall at this point? Or
yeah.
Razor Ramon, I should
yes.
say?
Yes. Shawn Michaels was the Intercontinental Champion, and then he stopped wrestling for a little while.
But his smile was intact.
Yeah, I believe his smile was intact at
okay.
this point. He had not been attacked. He had not been attacked outside of a bar.
Okay.
And then Razor Ramon became the Intercontinental Champion.
Right.
So then when Shawn came back, there were two Intercontinental Champions. because Shawn never technically lost the belt.
Oh, so he kind of staked his claim as, hey, I'm still the champion.
Right. Okay. You didn't beat me for it, so I'm still the champion. He's like, I'm the true champ, one of those deals. So then they're like,
there's one way to find out who's going to be it.
We're going to hang them both up.
And let's get a ladder and go crazy.
Yeah.
All right. So let me set the stage for WrestleMania 10, the 10th installment of the biggest event in sporting entertainment. Yeah. It's March 20th, 1994, back at the home of WrestleMania 1, Madison Square Garden in New York City. Mm-hmm. 18,000. And 65 people are in attendance. Are you surprised they didn't go for a bigger venue for this one?
A little bit. I do.
Because it's the 10th anniversary. Yeah.
It's weird because Vince goes back and forth between trying to go bigger and trying to like pay his respects and like remember where he came from.
Exactly. So. I was curious because they didn't have like the Hogan or Ultimate Warrior more. I wonder if that kind of shied him away from going for the big, maybe 10th anniversary venue or something like Giant Stadium or something like that.
Oh yeah, good point.
But I did like the fact that they were. I kind of hoped that they would do every 10th one back at. Of course, they won't now, but back at Madison Square Garden, just as kind of like the little touchstone.
Did that at WrestleMania 20.
Right.
But then 30, like, 30. No, we got to go big.
No, we've got too much money leaving on the table
here.
But our pay-per-view opens with the highlights from WrestleMania 1, and then we cut right to the live bit of Vince standing in the middle of the ring, and he's welcoming us to WrestleMania 10. And then he introduces Little Richard to sing America the Beautiful.
The original King of Rock and Roll, he says at one point.
Now, did you know who Little Richard was prior to this?
Yes.
Okay.
But
as a kid, did you?
Prior to this? Yeah. No.
Like as a kid, you're watching this and going, who is this very feminine black man on my screen?
Yep.
Okay.
I think I may have heard of him like one other time, but it was still very much a, I'm not sure who this is, but I'll watch it.
The originator, the king of rock and roll, stands in the middle of the ring wearing a beautiful red kind of sequin getup.
Yep.
And it is quite possibly the worst lip syncing performance I've ever seen. He was so off the rhythm of the track that it was it was distracting me, quite frankly. But then at one point he's joined by a church choir when the song kind of gets into the funky bit.
Yep, gets in the crescendo.
And I noticed there's one white lady in that. Oh. And I'm so glad that they let her in that choir. There was such unity.
Equal opportunity.
But now that America the Beautiful is over, Vince introduces the latest member, his new partner in the booth, because Vince is going to be doing the commentary in this one.
Yeah.
We see for the first time in WrestleMania history, Jerry the King Lawler. And what is your thought now on this commentating group? We had a kerfuffle in WrestleMania 9 with those three crazies.
Yeah.
What did you think of this package that they were doing?
I did not particularly enjoy the two.
Okay.
I think I didn't mind Lawler as he went on in the career of his commentating. Just straight out, for this one being his first WrestleMania, I wasn't a big fan of it. He sounded like he was trying to be Bobby Heenan or say things that Bobby Heenan would say, but he wasn't selling it the same way that Bobby would.
Right. I didn't as it goes on, I just didn't like their chemistry very much. But I agree. Your point, as you told me about it earlier, I just thought, oh, yeah, that does make sense. He's trying way too hard to be a heel announcer right here. And it's kind of ingenuine and doesn't really come across. But they start to set the stage and kind of get us all hyped up. And then there's a video kind of showing the history between the brother feud of Bret and Owen Hart.
Yep.
Because that's going to be our first match today, because match one is between
Owen Hart versus Bret Hart.
And the brothers come out and stare at each other in the middle of the ring. And this is the first match of two for Bret Hart.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you think of this match, sir?
This is one of the greatest matches of all time. In WrestleMania, I would say. It was their action was fantastic. They had great reversals. Their chemistry together, obviously they're brothers, so they've been wrestling for years. But the chemistry was incredible.
It looks like they had been wrestling this match for 10 years.
Yeah.
Like everything was so well choreographed. They both knew where each other was going to be at all times.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Owen really dominated this match a lot, probably because maybe Bret was saving himself for, of course, the main event in the evening. But there was such a fluidity of pace in this match.
Absolutely.
And the way they just, again, knew where each other was going to be.
Yeah.
The trust they had to try a lot of the more complicated moves.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, like there was a spot Owen Hart gave a back suplex pin to Bret Hart, and it was mm-hmm. so smooth. It yeah. looked perfect. And they just, their chemistry together was amazing.
What really surprised me was that because the match was so good, I was surprised at the reaction from the crowd.
Yeah.
Because they, although they seemed to be paying attention, they weren't, I don't think they were enjoying it as much as I was.
Yeah.
And it may just be because we're looking at it from a distance 20 years later and right. going, man, these are two really great hands just,
yeah.
you know, just going at it. But, you know, putting it in their perspective, it's the first match of the night.
Right.
You know, they've just seen a dark match, and then, mm-hmm. you know, now they're watching this exhibition of amazing yeah. wrestling. There's still no kind of fervor in the building. There's
yeah.
no electricity. I kind of would like to see this match much higher in, and I know they couldn't in this case,
mm-hmm.
but just see this match much higher or much later in the card.
Yeah.
Because then the crowd would just be so into it. Because it seemed like they built a feud.
Yeah.
They built the feud well enough because, you know, Owen had a lot of heat coming into the ring.
Mm-hmm.
He got a huge heel response.
Yep.
Bret, of course, had a huge babyface response. So it seemed like, you know, they were over in the way they were supposed to be. And I just, you know, kind of a small wasted opportunity to not have it much later.
Yeah.
But
I do understand, like, to start the show off on a good uh-huh. foot, because you put this 18-minute classic to start the match off, like, this is going to be really good.
Right.
But at the same time, if you put it later yeah. in the card, you put this, like, 6th or 7th on the card, it's going to blow the roof off.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, I completely agree. It was a great thing to start the match, but, you know, this deserved maybe just a little bit more.
Yeah.
But this, again, was like a 20-minute match, and it ended really interestingly because Bret Hart had kind of worked himself on top of Owen. Like, think of two people chicken fighting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so Bret Hart was on top of Owen's shoulders.
Yeah.
And then he looks like he was trying to do like a roll underneath his legs and then roll him up into a pin.
Yeah. Yep.
And then Owen just kind of takes him in the middle of that move and squashes him
yeah.
and kind of pins him for the 1-2-3.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually have Owen Hart going over in this yeah. match. Were you surprised by that?
Yeah. I mean, to see that, like, Bret's going to then go on to the main event no matter what.
Right.
It's like, it seems weird that you're going to make him lose the first match.
Right.
But at the same time, it does make sense because then Owen goes over, gets that response, gets the rub from that, and then Bret also goes over later in the night.
Yeah, like, I thought about that after the fact.
Yeah.
Like, because it's, yeah, you get 2-for-1 here. It's,
yeah.
Because I thought Owen went over really well.
Yeah.
And that sets him up in position to have bigger matches in the future, mm-hmm. especially the way they ended the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
He can have this ongoing jealousy feud with Bret.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it put both of them in a really good position because you're right. It didn't hurt Bret at all to put him over in this way.
Right.
I mean, Bret didn't look great in this, like, because he wasn't supposed to.
Right.
He actually let Owen take it to him and look really good. So yeah. I thought it was kind of cool they put him over, but it did surprise me quite a bit.
And the thing I hated the most about this match was right when the match ended, Owen had a piece of spit on the side of his mouth. And it was like, just wipe your mouth. Just yeah. wipe it, please. It
no, looks, no one told him.
Yeah, it looks gross.
Yeah, because Todd, what's Todd's name?
Pettengill.
Because they cut right to Todd Pettengill interviewing Owen after the match, and he still
yeah,
got
still
it just
got
hanging
it right there.
And
yeah.
all Todd had to do was say, hey, buddy,
yeah,
just a little bit right here.
Yeah.
But so Todd interviews Owen, and Owen is, of course, extolling his own greatness,
yeah.
taking the moniker from his brother, saying yeah. that he's the best there is, the best there was, and I will be the best there ever will
yeah.
be. So we're not quite all the way there, but just a really great open to the match, and we're kind of off and flying. We go right to, they have this package now
mm-hmm.
for the entire duration of this pay-per-view where it's great WrestleMania moments. And
yep.
so now we go back to WrestleMania 2, and they kind of show all the highlights that we've already covered.
Mm-hmm.
And then they cut back to the ring where
yep.
they introduce Cy Sperling,
yep.
the president of Hair Club for Men, and he is going to introduce a fully newly wigged
mm-hmm.
Howard Finkel.
Yep.
My question to you that you may or may not be able to answer is why?
I'm guessing Cy Sperling was really popular, or like the right. Hair Club for Men commercials were very popular at the time. So like, we got a bald guy. Let's put him on a rug.
It's so interesting because we've had at least 9 installments of this with different celebrity tie-ins
yep.
and, you know, just kind of like this pop culture integration into this entire event.
Yeah.
And this is by far the weirdest, right? most unnecessary one
yeah.
that I can recall. Mm-hmm. And so it was just so weird. But Finkel, to be fair, looked fantastic.
Yeah, he did.
In a wig.
Yeah. It's funny. He introduces the Fink, and then I'm like, to a tepid response. People weren't like super excited. And then Vince is exclaiming, "They like it! They like it!"
Way to sell it, Vince. Yeah. You are the man.
Yeah.
But this leads us right to match number two between
Bam Bam Bigelow with Luna Vachon versus Doink the Clown and Dink the Clown.
Now, this is pretty early on to have a gimmick match because this is a mixed tag match where when Bam Bam's in the ring, Doink has to be his opponent. And when Luna's in the ring, Dink has to be his opponent.
Yeah.
Quite possibly the weirdest sentence I've ever said. But the thing, and again, my problem with gimmick matches is I want to get right to the gimmick. I don't want to wait for it.
Yeah.
Bam Bam and Doink start this match out.
Yep.
And are going, and all I'm waiting for is, let's do the tag.
Yeah. Yep.
Let's just get this going.
Just do it.
And so about 90 seconds in, after Bam Bam throws around Doink for a while, and then Doink gets just a quick reversal, he goes and tags Dink, and I thought it was really funny when Dink got into the ring and started challenging Bam Bam.
He was like the little rooster on Looney Tunes.
Yeah. That's right. I didn't even think about that. That's a great analogy. But then Luna has to come in, and she is outmatched in this area because I don't remember the name of the gentleman that played Dink, but you know, obviously he was a skilled wrestler.
Yeah.
And she, although she is, I think she was worried about hurting him because every move that she did was so telegraphed.
Yeah.
It looked unnatural. And so although it was a part of the match that I wanted to see, it looked really kind of phony and silly.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think they sold it or it came off very well.
Right.
But the majority of this match was between, you know, the big guys because we got all the fun wrestling from them. What were there any fun parts for you in this match?
Dink went to the top rope for like a splash or something.
Yeah.
And he landed on his feet and then did a front flip. I was like, his legs. It looked like he could have broken his legs. Like, I'm like, oh, God.
It did look really bizarre because I thought he was going to land on his stomach because Luna had that segment because she went to the top rope and did the splash and Dink moved.
Yeah.
These names. Dink moved and she, you know, she hit her front and it looked, so it looked like a kind of a mirror move.
Yeah.
But you're right. He kind of landed really weird and then he just kind of flipped over and he's just an elasticy, rubbery kind of guy.
Like, you could have broken your knees, guy.
Right. Bam Bam does get the win in this. And then we had some kind of after match extracurricular activities.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's basically, it was kind of funny because Dink standing there challenging Bam Bam to a fight.
Yeah.
And then Luna comes in the ring and they both start kind of pounding away on him a little bit.
Yeah.
Do a little body slam. And then they both kind of, you know, do the momentum thing off the ropes and go to do a double splash on him.
Yeah.
Dink is supposed to roll out of the way and both of them are supposed to land flat and miss him.
Yeah.
It looks like he rolled the wrong way or didn't exactly know what was going to happen because he rolled right in under Luna.
Yeah.
Who hit him pretty clearly.
Yeah.
But then had to kind of shove him out of the way and look like she was hurt by the process. But
well, I mean, it was a little bit of a botch, but at least he didn't land under Bam Bam.
That's true. If you're going to mess up rolling a certain way, he rolled the right way.
Yes.
We then go right to an interview with a fake Bill Clinton.
Yep.
And I couldn't tell if this has been a bit that they've been doing a long time or just some guy that they hired for this special event. But the camera cuts to what they're calling the presidential box in Madison Square Garden to a very obvious Bill Clinton impersonator.
Yes.
And Vince is going crazy.
Loving every second of it.
Because the president's here.
Yeah.
The president of the United States is right here.
Also because it was Vince's idea, so he's probably loving it.
Exactly.
This is amazing.
And so Todd is there interviewing the, I'm doing air quotes, President Bill Clinton. And the guy's doing a really terrible impersonation.
Yeah.
He looks fine.
Yep.
But the impersonation is bad. And my whole thought watching this was, they're in New York City.
Yeah.
Saturday Night Live is right down the road. Phil Hartman is still there at this time.
Yeah.
Go they could have just, you know, spent $50,000 to have Phil come out and do 5 minutes of an amazing impression.
Yeah. And it would have been hilarious.
And it would have been
funny,
great.
You know?
So the segment is kind of lackluster because the impression's so bad. And mm-hmm. we also have, like, Urinar Scheister interrupts it to talk about taxes or something. I mean, it's just the bit is pretty terrible.
Yeah, they did not have good comedy writers at the time.
They did not. And so then we go to our third WrestleMania moment of the night where we highlight the highlights of WrestleMania 3.
Yeah.
And now we're ready for match number 3, which is between
the Macho Man Randy Savage versus Crush with Mr. Fuji.
Falls count anywhere in this match, and by saying that, you know they're going to be anywhere.
Yep.
Macho Man comes out of retirement for the 97th time to fight Crush, who has the oddest colored mullet I've ever seen.
Yeah, he's got a weird
hair. Got Black Business on top with Blonde Party in the back, which was pretty interesting to watch. Yeah. But this one gets started really quickly as Macho Man attacks Crush right at in the entrance, in the entrance way.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets two backbreaker. The Macho Man is administered the backbreaker because Crush picks him up. Two backbreakers, pin.
Yes.
All right, now the rules of this match are if there's a fall, like the way to win this match is you can't get back in the ring after a 60-second count after a fall.
Mm-hmm.
So the Macho Man is pinned after two backbreakers.
Mm-hmm.
1, 2, 3, first fall. Now he has 60 seconds to get into the ring.
Yep.
And he takes 59 seconds.
Yes.
Now, what I wanted to ask you was, the time limit, like the race against time is great. Did you like that the first one was right down to the last second?
It doesn't make sense to me.
Right. Like, I didn't like it either. Yeah. Like, let's kind of, like, 20 seconds. Like, it's just two backbreakers.
Right. Like, and it's also weird because this is the first False Count Anywhere match they've done.
Right.
And this is not how False Count Anywhere matches are now. Because it's like False Count Anywhere, except actually in the ring. Because they have to then get back to the ring in 60 seconds. So at one point, like, Macho Man, like, does the elbow drop to Crush and then pushes him out of the ring to pin him.
Yep.
Like,
he did exactly. He got the flying elbow drop.
Yep.
He wants to pin him.
Yeah.
But he has to push him outside of the ring to pin him, get the 1, 2, 3 so that he cannot get in within 60 seconds.
Right.
So then we have to wait for 59 seconds.
Yes.
While a man lays on a plastic mat less than a foot from the ring.
Yep.
And then he finally crawls in. But I thought it was weird that every time there was a fall, and I think there was only, well, there was three total, but that we went to the full length of the count.
Yes.
Which, I don't know. I just didn't like it.
Yeah.
Let's build it up, build it up, build it up.
The elbow drop looked as pretty as ever. Like, he knows how to sell that move. He knows how to administer that elbow drop, and he does a great job every single time.
I'm glad he came out of retirement, and he may have wrestled for another 15 years. Oh my gosh. So the match continues. We now have one fall apiece, and so of course they're going to take it to the back.
Yep.
So we fight up the, or not the ramp, but like the entranceway to the back. The Macho Man gets a pin, right, gets a fall.
Yep.
1, 2, 3. And then they're under a scaffolding that has some rope or what do you call
it? Some wire. Like, I don't know. It's like steel with like rubber encasing around it.
Right.
But it's not wire. It's not rope.
It's not rope. It's not wire. But it is something to tie someone up with. So he ties him up like a pig.
Yeah.
Starts to pull him up through a pulley to hang him from the ceiling, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And then he kind of tries to tie it to the scaffolding.
Yeah.
But he misses the tie.
Yeah.
And Crush actually falls to the ground. As Macho Man's going back up to the ring, but he has to sell the fact that he can't get back up.
Yeah.
So he just kind of lays there while the rest of the crowd in the garden count down the final 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. But Macho Man ends up winning because Crush can't just kind of move his legs and run.
And this was Macho Man's last televised match with WWE.
Was it really?
Yep.
I guess we never heard of him after that.
No, he just disappeared.
He went to join his buddy down in WCWville, but it's so weird. Like the last, because he was commentating the last one, but he's already had two retirement matches.
Yeah.
So then we go right from that match to they talk about the Fan Fest that they had, and so they're kind of showing little highlights of kids having fun at Fan Fest and all of the current and former WWF or E superstars that are intermingling with the fans out there. And then we have our fourth WrestleMania moment. And we're recapping WrestleMania 4,
yeah,
which is the Atlantic City one with the Macho Man winning the big tournament. Yeah.
And there was no mention of Liz. What are you doing? She was the MVP for me.
Well, but she's...
She was the MVP for Mania 4, and now she's not even mentioned.
Well, now she's just an ex-wife, buddy.
Yeah, that's it. Solid point.
But it leads us from the segment of WrestleMania 4 to match number 4 between...
Leilani Kai versus Alundra Blaze.
Ooh. And those of you may remember Alundra Blaze as Medusa.
Yep.
And those of you may remember Leilani Kai from WrestleMania 1.
Mm-hmm.
Who has a drastically different look
yes.
than she had when she fought Wendy Richter mm-hmm. at WrestleMania 1. Now, No Moolah.
They do show her in the crowd.
They do show her in the crowd, so yep. maybe they could have just reconnected. But she looks way different now with the big crazy witch hair
yeah.
and just the black leotard. Because it's so weird that they show them favoring one wrestler so majorly yeah. over the other, because they opened on just Leilani already in the ring with just like a, hey, here's this lady right here.
Yep.
And then of course she's going to win because they have all this production value.
Right.
Fireworks and just she's got this huge ring gear and yeah. all of this stuff.
And then Leilani Kai just looks like she came off the street.
Exactly. I didn't find that these women had a lot of chemistry. I found that Leilani was having to do most of the work in this.
Mm-hmm.
She had most of the offense. Now, Alundra had a lot of good counter moves, and
yeah.
you know, she's got the sunset flip down.
Mm-hmm.
But it seemed like she was always just trying to counter everything. As far as like someone being put over, it really just kind of looked like, oh, I got this win because I just had the right counter at the right yeah. time or something like that.
Yeah, like she had some good strikes. Like her kicks were done really, really well.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a very weird. They didn't, like you said, they didn't have very much chemistry together,
mm-mm.
and it was just kind of very much like, all right, Alundra Blaze is prettier. Like, yeah, she's gonna win.
I guess this was just a way to, yeah, that's pretty much it. This was pretty's gonna win over ugly.
Yep.
And you know, in about 3 minutes, that's what happened yeah. because.
Oh, and in this match, Lawler was trying to be like Bobby Heenan.
Yeah.
Lawler kept saying, "Look how pretty she is," and then Vince would say Alundra, and he's like, no, Leilani. Look how pretty Leilani Kai is. I'm like, it works for Bobby, because right. Bobby
meant it.
Yeah, Bobby
or was, he could sell it.
Yeah, Bobby knew his character, where right. like Lala didn't seem to know his character on Mike. Even though he was the king for like 30 years before this, he just, it's weird. He didn't get it.
But Alundra Blaze wins with a German suplex for the 1-2-3.
Yeah.
And we're finally done with the women's match, and we mm-hmm. can go on to more interesting things. They go right to the WrestleMania 5 segment,
yeah.
and then we go right to Todd interviewing Rhonda Shear and Shawn Michaels in the mm-hmm. back, and they're interrupted by Burt Reynolds.
Yes.
Also, a Hair Club for Men client.
Yeah.
So I guess we have a theme going on here.
Yep.
Bald men are welcome.
Yep, good. It's about time.
But Stone Cold would have fit in fantastic yeah. back in WrestleMania 10.
Oh, man, imagine if Stone Cold showed up with like a Hair Club for Men wig.
That would be a Stone Cold version 2.0. That would yeah. have been a great bit for them to have, yep. you know, after he got hurt.
Yeah.
But alas, it never happened.
Yep.
But now we're ready for match number 5 between
Men on a Mission of Mo and Mabel with Oscar versus the Quebecers, Jacques and Pierre with Johnny Polo.
Now there's one familiar face that some of you that are more into the modern era are familiar with. Viscera mm-hmm. is Mabel.
Yep. Johnny Polo is actually Raven as well.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Yep. Yep.
Why are they wasting him down there holding a mallet?
Yeah. That's.
I did not even know that. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, he's wasted down there.
No, yeah, he's
get him
wasted
in the ring.
Horribly.
But this match is for the WWEF, whatever. This match is for the WWF Tag Team Championship.
Yeah.
And this is an 8-minute match that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got home when I started watching this one. Yeah. I was still drunk after a wedding, so I was watching this, and I'm like, oh, what is happening? And I'm like, Oscar is not a good rapper.
That's true.
I was not paying too much attention to this.
A lot of royalties to the whoop. There it is, people.
Yeah.
Tag team in
Tag
effect.
Tag team, yep.
And
Tag team back again.
The only Viscera did a lot of work in this match, as you know, just offensively and defensively.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of impressed that the big guy had to do the brunt of the work, because his tag team partner, I think, maybe had one segment, maybe one and a half.
Yeah, Mo did not have
much. But he didn't do very much. But some of the big moves were the double suplex on Viscera. Those two guys getting, because Viscera's like 6'9", 500 some odd pounds.
Yeah, he's big.
They got him up in the air and got him down, and I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I think the Quebecers had a lot of good double team moves. Like, they would do the moves to each other, but they would land on their opponents. Like, they would suplex, like Jacques would suplex Pierre, but he would land on Mabel, which is like they were new. They were different moves, and I liked it.
Yeah, they worked very well together as a tag team, but this one ended in a countout. So Men on a Mission win this match, but of course the rules state that you cannot lose on a disqualification.
Yeah.
So
I put Men on a Mission win via countout to literally no crowd response.
Exactly.
Nobody gave a shit to what happened.
Nor should they have, because nobody made us care about anything in that match.
Yeah.
But now that one's finally over, so we've got two kind of ho-hum ones back-to-back. But now we're going to remember WrestleMania 6 in Toronto, where the Ultimate Warrior beat Hulk Hogan in front of 67,000 people. And now we're going to introduce Rhonda Shear down to the ring, because she's our guest ring
timekeeper.
Oh, that's right. She's our guest timekeeper for this match.
Yeah.
And she's escorted to the ring by new kid on the block, Donnie Wahlberg, who gets a real heel response.
Yeah.
They boo him pretty good.
They did not like him.
The New York guys don't like the Boston guys, or the tough guys don't like the goofy boy band guy, or whatever. He had heat with everyone in the crowd.
He was the bad boy from the NKOTB, though.
That's right. He is the bad boy. If you're going to fight anyone in NKOTB, you don't want to pick Donnie.
just a sidebar, there's a New Kids on the Block video, and he's like the badass, like leaning up against the wall, and he pulls a peach out of his pocket.
That's right.
And then he just takes a bite out of a peach.
I eat fruit.
Yeah. That's right. I'm a badass, but I still need my vitamins.
I eat the pit.
Yeah.
That's how crazy I am.
Oh, shit.
Deal with me.
Donnie, you kidding me right now?
Fun fact, and something that you should know, Danny Wood is not the one you want to mess with.
Like,
Donnie projects himself as a tough guy. Yeah. Danny Wood is the actual tough guy of New Kids on the Block. So,
if
you ever come up against them in an alley, take any of them but Danny.
Okay.
That's just my advice to you.
That makes sense.
But now we introduce, because Donnie's going to introduce the rest of the people coming down, and he introduces Mr. Perfect as our guest referee for this match.
Yeah.
And this is the match number 6, between
Yokozuna with Mr. Fuji and Jim Cornette versus Lex Luger.
I'm curious as to why Yokozuna needed two managers. although I don't need an answer, because I'm so glad Jim Cornette was there.
Yeah.
He looked amazing.
Yep.
He had this really oversized black satin jacket on, with kind of like the military, I don't know what you call those, but it's the
epaulettes.
Yes. And they had he looked very military.
Yeah.
In the gayest way possible.
Right?
Yeah, it was good to see old Corny down. But he and Mr. Fuji didn't stand together. They stood on opposite sides of the ring.
That's
coverage, maximum coverage.
Yeah, exactly, maximum coverage. Luger cannot go out two sides at this point.
And probably the biggest transformations in the past year is Lex Luger, because he came in as this kind of narcissistic heel type for WrestleMania 9.
Mm-hmm.
And now his character has taken just a big turn.
Yeah.
Because now he's the American hero. He's wearing the red, white, and blue.
Yep.
And we basically have a USA versus Japan situation.
Yep.
And I kind of wanted them to go back and get Gorilla in the back so that he could start throwing out the Jap references, Pearl Harbor references. But they didn't do that.
Good.
What did you think of this match, sir?
I loved Mr. Perfect's exercise pants and his referee full outfit.
He was head to toe black and white stripe, that's for sure.
I very much enjoyed it. Yokozuna played the big man role perfectly. Like, he knew his character to a T. Like, he knew exactly what he was doing.
When I read this match leading up to this,
I
wouldn't think it would be good.
Right.
And I was really surprised at how good it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yokozuna was really great in this match. And Lex Luger, although he has a certain reputation in the business, I don't think gets the credit for how far he came as quickly as he did. He always had the look, because he had the physique.
Yeah.
But for someone that hadn't been wrestling for 10 years or hadn't kind of grown up in the business, being like a former football player, he got to a really respectable worker stat. Like, he, I thought he was great in this match for what my expectations were.
Yes, yeah.
And so I thought these guys put on a really good, like, 15-minute match.
Right. Like, I've never expected Luger to put on, like, a five-star classic.
Right.
But to do, like, a solid match where you're not, like, where you're watching, like, oh, this is pretty good. Like, Luger does that all very well.
I was actually kind of disappointed that it had the ending that it did. Because, and even though they may have probably been trying to create an angle between Luger and Perfect, which is fine, because I'm sure that was going to be fantastic.
Yep.
And that's what ended up happening. The two managers got brought into the ring and kicked around. And so, you know, Luger kind of punches both of them out, which is, you know, anytime you can watch Jim Cornette get punched out, I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
But then he goes to cover Yoko, and, you know, now Mr. Perfect is not going to let him cover it because he wants to clear the ring.
Yeah.
Let's get these managers out, which he would never do as a wrestler.
Right.
But now that he's a proper official, he wants to get those guys out of the ring.
He's a respectable referee.
Well, this, of course, angers Luger, and Luger starts challenging him and actually pushes him the bare minimum amount.
Yeah.
And Mr. Perfect pulls the trigger and disqualifies him.
Yeah, well, you're not supposed to touch the ref.
That is exactly true, and he did it, and he should have known better.
Yeah.
But the end of the result of this match is Yokozuna winning by disqualification. And so Perfect goes back to the back, and he's being interviewed by Todd, and then, you know, of course, Luger comes back, and now we kind of have – now we have heat between these guys.
Yeah.
My favorite part of the exchange is Luger going, "You give me one reason why you rang the bell," and Perfect just goes, "I'll give you three."
Yeah,
and then he gives him three really good reasons.
Yeah, like, oh, these make sense.
Right.
Only thing Luger can do, like, okay, thank you very much.
Well, appreciate, I just asked for one.
Yeah, appreciate your honesty, but
I'm mad that you gave me two extra reasons, you son of a bitch.
Right. I only needed one. I do like that the crowd chanted bullshit.
Yeah.
That's always fun.
But I thought this, you know, I understand they're trying to do something for the future, but I thought, you know, hey, this match would have been great with just a regular finish, but that's just me splitting hairs.
Thinking about it, there's a lot of matches that I wish had just a, you know, like this one person puts his finishing move on,
right,
and they win.
Wouldn't it be nice sometimes?
Yeah, right.
But we're always trying to build for what's next.
Yeah.
And so hopefully those two went on to have an amazingly financially lucrative feud.
Yeah.
I could not possibly tell you if that were the case. I don't know. Because actually probably Perfect. Or actually, they probably both defected for WCW like the next day.
They did very quickly because I know Luger was on the premiere episode of Nitro.
That's right.
Like, the next day after he wrestled on WWF, so.
Wow. So, yeah, there's some foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Probably both future members of the NWO at some point.
That's accurate. They are. They were. They were both.
Oh, wow. Oh, well, that's not hard because everybody was a member of the NWO at one point.
Yeah.
But then we go to a little vignette or the WrestleMania moment of WrestleMania 7, and that leads us right to match number 8 between
Earthquake versus Atom Bomb with Harvey Whippleman.
And this match is barely even worth mentioning because it did not even last long. It's 30 seconds of nonsense.
Yep.
It starts out with Finkel being yelled at by Whippleman.
Yep.
There's a little incident there.
Mm-hmm.
No wig was pulled off, which is disappointing because we completely set it up for that.
Right.
So Adam Bomb comes out to stick up for his man Harvey Whippleman.
Yep.
And so then I guess Earthquake finally comes out from the back to start the match and just squashes him really quickly. And for no reason whatsoever, this is kind of like the traditional thing before the main event at this point is we have a match that has no consequence whatsoever.
Yep.
And it goes very quickly just to, guess, kind of cleanse the palate or let people go to the bathroom or whatever the thinking is. But I hope there comes a day, and I think there has, that they don't have these types of matches.
Yeah.
So
they, for the most part, they have, but every once in a while, you still get the popcorn match right before the main event.
It drives me nuts.
It does. Yeah, me too.
But so that's over, and we go right to the back to where they're interviewing Jim Cornette and Yokozuna, and Jim Cornette cuts an incredible promo.
Really good.
One of the best promo guys in the business. I'm sorry he can't be less of an asshole so that he can work more.
Yeah.
Because he is incredible on the mic.
Really, really good.
But That's just the way it is. He cuts a great promo.
Yeah.
Yoko buttons it with a bonsai.
That's all he needed to do.
That's right. And
I love that Cornette called him. He comes out and he shoves Todd and goes, "Get out of here, petting zoo." Like, perfect.
Oh, Jim, you know what to do, buddy. Yeah. But we do another vignette of WrestleMania moments. It's WrestleMania 8. Mm-hmm. And now we're ready for match number 9 between
Shawn Michaels with Diesel versus Razor Ramon.
This is a no-rules ladder match for the Intercontinental Championship,
yep.
And this is one of the classic wrestling matches, not only in WrestleMania history, but in wrestling history.
Yes.
And watching this 20 years later, with all the hype and all the talk that's been spoken about this, mm-hmm. It was still fantastic to watch. Like,
it was great.
What were your thoughts just even sitting down to watch this? Were you looking to do it critically, or were you just kind of looking at it as a mark, fan out on it? Or
well, right when, just before I get into it, Bill Dunn, when he introduces it, he goes, "There are no rules." And Vince goes, "Well," like he's like, hang on, "there are some rules. Wait. But he doesn't explicitly say that. He's just like, "Well," but it's, I was watching this and I'm like, these guys were so creative with what they were doing. Like, this is still like the high watermark for ladder matches. Like, this happened 22 years ago.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, and it's still like, no, this is the one that you look at. Like, obviously, like, later on we get like the TLCs where they have such big moves. This is still the one you look at to how to put together a ladder match.
Right, but to that point, we have seen all that since then.
Yeah.
And I sat there watching it still...
Yeah.
Amazed by this match. Like, right. we've seen the bigger moves, the more matches, the higher ladders, all of that stuff. And the psychology and the way they put together this match was still fantastic. Like, it wasn't like, oh, this was...
Yeah, we've seen this.
This wasn't the crap that started the trend.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, things evolved to 10 times better than the beginners.
Yeah.
This was still incredible.
Yeah. You still watch... Exactly. I was watching this and like, this is still amazing.
Right. This was two guys... One ladder.
Yes.
That's it.
Yep.
They didn't have. There weren't ladders all over the place.
Right.
They weren't doing double ladder moves.
Yeah.
They weren't doing. It was two guys, one ladder, and a lot of physical punishment.
Yes.
Wrestling is often called fake by people that don't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Even the people that are smart to it.
Yeah.
Still go, hey, these guys protect themselves, and of course they know how to do that.
Yeah.
These were two guys that were still taking shots.
Yeah. There were multiple times where Shawn just hit Razor in the gut with a ladder, and like he hit him with the ladder.
Yeah, there's no way to pull it.
No,
at all.
Yeah,
you
need to make it look good.
That whip off the rope, okay, you know, as they're bringing the ladder into the ring for the first time.
Yeah.
Razor puts it on the apron. You know, he's on the ground.
Yeah,
Shawn comes off the ropes and just slide kicks it right into his abdomen.
Yeah,
and you said it. He didn't put his arm up.
No,
he didn't do anything to block it. He took a full on ladder shot, and the sound was incredible.
Yeah.
Full-on ladder shot in the abdomen,
and
I don't know how that doesn't break a rib,
right?
But it was incredible.
Yeah,
the punishment that these two took in this match, and just kind of the psychology. We also talked about while we were watching it, the fact that because there weren't so many toys to play with,
mm-hmm.
it allowed them the proper time to sell the pain.
Yes,
right.
Yeah,
they weren't taking some abuse and then going right to the next move.
Mm-hmm.
It was someone just took a big shot, and now we've got to struggle to even find, you know, the apparatus,
right,
or find the next thing to do.
Yeah.
The pacing and the psychology was so great, I think, because of that.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you're just watching two daredevils just figuring out the next way to just make it look like they're
like,
just to kill each other.
Just two amazing wrestlers putting together an amazing match in the like the first of its kind. And I know like they had done this in like house shows.
Yeah.
And Shawn had wrestled Bret in a ladder match before.
Mm-hmm.
This was still like an amazing match, and like it was still, you know, it wasn't done before like in as big as this was.
Right.
It was very little done before it, and like, I know, like, Ric Flair has come out and said, I was on, a Legends of Wrestling roundtable, where he said, Scott Hall's famous for being in the ring while Shawn Michaels wrestled the ladder. And, like, that's a really funny line, but that's wrong, because this match, like, for a while, like, Shawn Michaels did a lot of the offense. Scott Hall did a lot of work in this, and, like, he took a beating.
Right. Shawn was a lot of the ones setting up the moves and kind of building the moment.
Yeah.
But it was Scott Hall, taking the shot.
Yeah.
He's the one laying there while you know, Shawn Michaels is on the top rope and just kind of falling with the ladder over. Like, he's sitting there having to just wait for this thing to hit him.
Yeah.
And so to kind of discredit that, I you know, you're right. Yeah, it is a funny line. Mm-hmm. But it really discredits all the great work that Scott Hall did in this match.
Yeah, because, like, the... And he was selling, like, his leg for the majority of the match. Like, he threw Shawn Michaels out of the ring, and then, like, he just dropped to a knee because he was selling the leg. He's like, obviously, I need to give Shawn Michaels time to get back up in the ring, but he was selling it. He was selling the leg to help out the partner in the match. I'm like, what are you...
Right.
And you're... It was so good.
I don't know if I've ever seen a perfect match, but I know that this one was... I can't imagine those two guys going to the back afterwards and thinking about... missed spots. I can't imagine them being too critical of that match. I think that they, as perfectionist as Shawn Michaels is, or even as Scott Hall, I can't imagine those two sitting down for a beer afterwards and having a problem with that.
Right.
Stole the show.
Yeah.
So, but this one ends with Shawn Michaels on top of the ladder going for the belts because they're suspended, of course, from the ceiling. Scott Hall pushes the ladder. Shawn Michaels falls into the ropes for the nut shot, which is something that I like.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Shawn gets tied up in the ropes.
Yeah, gets his leg caught.
Something great that you mentioned was as he's trying to get out of it, manages to get himself more tied up.
Yeah.
Which gives, you know, Scott enough time to set the ladder up, get the belts.
Yeah.
But it didn't make – both of those guys came out of there looking strong.
Yes.
It was fantastic.
It was a great match.
One of the best matches I've ever seen.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
And unfortunately, we couldn't end on that note. Yeah. We had to keep going. Although, I mean, the rest of it was still fine. It's just like, oh, man, where do you go after that?
Yeah.
But here's where you go after that.
Yeah.
You cut to the back
yeah.
with a lot of jobbers yelling at each other.
Yeah, it was the Head Shrinkers, Double J, Jeff Jarrett, IRS, and the motto, Rick Martel.
Yep, and they're all fighting and fussing because... on the card was supposed to be a 10-man, tag match.
Yep.
And they're having trouble deciding who's going to be the captain.
Yeah.
And so they just decide to call the match.
Yeah, now, because they couldn't decide who the captain was.
The kayfabe thing is that the match was called due to time because we were busy watching really good matches.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad they made that decision.
Yeah.
I'm glad they didn't make me have to watch that.
Right.
So applause to you, Vince McMahon and WWE. You made the right call there. But then we cut to Ted talking to the fake President Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
Ted DiBiase is apparently near the presidential box.
Yeah, well, DiBiase took the IRS's spot because IRS was supposed to be in that match.
It's the Secret Service, I think, needs to look into their practices a little bit more.
Yeah.
But he's now talking. He has President Clinton's ear, and they're doing... the last shitty comic thank bit goodness. Of the night.
Yeah.
So now we can move on to our final WrestleMania moment of the night. And although it was a big shit bomb, they felt the need to remind us of WrestleMania 9.
Yep.
And so now that we're done with that, we watch the package that shows the long feud between Bret the Hitman Hart and Yokozuna.
Mm-hmm.
Before this match starts, we even have some more festivities because we have some more celebrities that are here.
Yep.
Who else do they have?
Bill Dunn introduced Jenny Garth of 90210
nice.
As guest timekeeper and Burt Reynolds of Burt Reynolds fame as ring announcer.
Perfect. That's exactly the right way to put that. But we also have a guest referee, of course, Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Yeah, he gets a huge pop.
How could you not?
Yeah.
The legend, the man that built WrestleMania 1, 2, and probably 3.
Yeah.
Not 3, but no. Built WrestleMania 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Certainly deserves to be here for the 10th anniversary to be a guest referee.
Yep.
So now we're ready for match number 10 between...
Bret Hart versus Yokozuna with Mr. Fuji and Jim Cornette.
And this match is for the WWF title.
Mm-hmm.
Please keep in mind that this is these gentlemen's second match of the night.
Yep.
And Yokozuna, of course, is had the smallest time of turnaround. He only wrestled like 3 matches ago, which is, I guess he maybe had like 40 minutes off or something like that.
Yeah.
But so these guys start to go at it very quickly, even during Bret Hart's intro as he came out second. But this match was really slow, and I don't know if it was purposeful for psychology reasons, or it was just because they're both just tired.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, are they selling the tired thing,
right,
to just have a slower match, or are they both just really tired?
I'm thinking it's a little bit. I think it's mostly selling, because like when Brett was walking to the ring, he was still selling the knee from his match with Owen. So I think it's partly, it's a lot of it's like psychology, because Brett is big on like the psychology of a match. So I think it was probably just him selling, selling the knee injury to make him go slower. So it's a slower match. And then also it makes it feel like, I guess, bigger when he wins, because like he's so tired, but he still won, you know?
Yeah. Like he overcame all of this physical pain. Yeah, all the adversity,
like exhaustion.
But there is there are just a lot of moments of, you know, Yoko doing an offensive move and then waiting for Brett to recover, for Brett to recover, just so that Yoko could do something else to him.
I always thought Yokozuna's legs look like chicken wings, like or like a drumstick.
Right.
I always thought that. I don't know. Just thought, wanted to bring that up.
Well, I won't be eating chicken tonight. That's fantastic.
At that moment.
But that leads us to kind of an odd finish in that Yokozuna goes up on the second rope to do the bonsai splash, and he kind of starts to lose his balance.
Yeah.
And actually, he loses his balance, falls backwards, and apparently that's enough of an inertia-momentum combination to knock him out.
Yep.
Because without doing any offensive move or anything whatsoever, Brett just lays on top of him, gets the 1-2-3, and the new WWF champion is Brett the Hitman Hart. And the era of the Hitman and the little man in WWE begins.
Yep. Officially.
So the tide has turned. We're now in a new era completely.
Mm-hmm.
And the wrestlers, we get some wrestlers coming from the back to to give praise to our new hero, which I'm sure Brett enjoyed greatly.
Yeah, yeah. All the faces came out. Even Burt Reynolds and Ronda Shearer came into the ring to celebrate. Yeah.
Donnie was there too.
Yeah,
because you know he in KOTB, man.
He was just looking for a peach.
That's right. But now
and Owen Hart did not come into the ring.
What did he do? He did something.
He came out into the aisleway and just like stood there and stared at him and like. I should be there.
That's right.
One of those things.
That's right. I'm now, even though I beat you tonight, I'm still jealous of you.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I let you win, little brother, but I got a belt here that says I'm the WWF champion.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so that's the end. That's what we go out on. And so now let's do our awards for the night. Jue, who's your pop of the night?
My pop of the night's going to Roddy Piper. It was like such a surprise pop.
Yeah.
Like he came out and then the crowd went crazy.
Yeah, that's right. There was something that was kind of leading up to him being that, like, he didn't do any promos. He didn't do anything.
No, it was just
wasn't advertised.
Look, here I am.
My pop of the night is Hitman's first entrance. And it could be that it coincided with the beginning of the pay-per-view, but he just got a huge babyface reaction. And because we've watched him in like maybe the last five or six WrestleManias, you can see just how big he's gotten. He's fully over with the crowd, and you know they were really behind him and
super popular. Yeah.
My bump of the night was in the ladder match, and it was the Shawn Michaels slide into the ladder that Razor did not block, and it just went right into him. That was pretty. I don't know if it looked as bad as it, but or I don't know if it felt as bad as it looked.
Yeah.
But it looked painful.
It did not look good.
What was your bump?
My bump of the night, also from the ladder match, Razor Irish whips Shawn Michaels into the corner, and he has a ladder set up.
Yeah.
He takes a solid bump right on the ladder and then flips outside the ring. And like that was a solid bump.
That was huge.
That was a big bump.
That's a really good one. I now change my mind, and it's that.
Yeah.
What is your botch of the night?
My botch of the night is Owen spit on his cheek.
Really good, yeah.
That bothered me.
I don't know how you don't feel that. I usually can.
Yeah, you can tell. You can,
when all my food's sitting on the side of my mouth, I always kind of know something's there. But
maybe still the adrenaline.
It probably was. It was really distracting.
Yeah.
Trying to watch a guy talk really tough with, you know, a lot of just saliva on the side of his mouth.
Just a loogie on his cheek.
My botch of the night was in the gimmick match between Bam Bam and Luna and the Doink Dink combination. When, as we described, the double splash that missed.
Yeah.
It looked so bad, and even though they tried to recover from it, it was just a completely missed spot that just kind of ruined the ending to that match. So that's my botch of the night.
Mm-hmm.
My spot of the night is the finish of the ladder match.
Mm-hmm.
Just, kind of the build-up to the end, and then Shawn getting caught up in the ropes and just, you know, the psychology of, you know, not being able to get out of it and, and get the win, and watching Razor just, you know, set up the ladder, and then the way he even grabbed the belt and just kind of fell down exhausted. It was that whole little segment there.
That was a really good.
That's my spot of the match. What's really yours? Good.
My spot of the night goes to Bret Hart giving a superplex to Owen Hart.
Wow.
Yeah. It was on the top rope, first match.
And that's right.
His superplex, and it was like, it looked amazing. I thought it looked really, really good.
You can't do that unless you've worked with each other as much as they have. Like, the trust that took between those two.
Yep.
I would only expect to see something like that from brothers or people that have been, you know, they've probably wrestled each other a million times.
Yeah.
Not literally, but
just a lot. So many times. They've wrestled each other a lot of times.
And, you know, it looked like it there. Mm-hmm. What is your worst match of the night,
sir? My worst match goes to Men on a Mission versus the Quebecers.
It's tough to argue with that. Mm-hmm. I just, but I'm going to
do it.
But not, you know, it's not gonna be angry. It's just that earthquake squash.
How could you think that was the worst?
Because that match was crap too.
Yeah.
But I did take one thing away from that one, and that I got to see Viscera. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know how big a deal that is, but it's like, oh, I know that guy.
Yeah.
That was pretty much it.
Yeah.
Had I known that Raven was down there, that would have even been better.
Yeah.
But my worst match of the night was the earthquake squash match. Yeah. We're wasting time and got the Fink in it and blah, whatever.
Yeah.
The best match of the night is probably going to be the same, but I want to hear your reasons for it. So what is your best match of the night?
My best match of the night is going to be a shock to you probably, because I'm going Owen versus
no!
Bret.
No!
Yeah! What? I'm going Owen versus Bret.
Why?
In my opinion, I think they are both fantastic matches.
Yes.
But I don't think Owen versus Bret gets as much credit as it deserves. I think the Shawn Michaels versus Razor Ramon ladder match is amazing.
Uh-huh.
But I think that Owen versus Bret deserves just as much credit for being as good, if not, in my opinion, it was a better match for having no gimmick.
Fair.
It told just as good of a story without any gimmick.
Yeah, earlier we talked about if that match were later in the card,
yep,
it would have gotten a better response. Do you think that's the case? Like,
I think so.
If you put that ladder match first,
yep,
do you think that we'd be talking about two different things here, possibly?
It's very possible. I know that, like, WrestleMania now almost always starts with a ladder match.
Yeah.
But I think if the Owen versus Bret ladder match were later in the card, or not a ladder match, Owen versus Bret match were later in the card, absolutely.
I completely agree that match is really overlooked, and it was overshadowed by the fact that they had this, you know, amazing match after it.
Yeah.
With the energy of the crowd, with everything that was going on.
Yeah.
That match was fantastic. But the only match that I just kept going, oh my God. And like, I was, you know, in these, when we're doing these, I kind of look for the ones that I'm not looking at critically. I just kind of get sucked in as a mark.
Yeah.
That, I mean, of course. It was a ladder match. So.
Yeah. No.
But excellent point.
Yeah.
So who is your MVP for WrestleMania 10?
My MVP is Yokozuna. He's billed at 568 pounds, and he wrestles twice. Two really good matches. Like, they're not amazing matches, but they're both very, very good matches.
He wrestled 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So, you know, in two different spurts, 30 minutes apart.
Mm-hmm.
That's for if I were that big, getting up from one chair to another within 30 minutes would be taxing.
Yeah, right.
But he did. You know, he did that.
Yeah.
So that is pretty great. My MVP is going to be Scott Hall.
I like it.
Because he took a lot of punishment.
He did, yeah.
And made it look great. And did it without... What impressed me the most is that he did it without trying to pull it. Like, trying to limit the devastation.
Yeah.
He just... It seems like he made up his mind before this match that I'm just going to take abuse because it looks great.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll hurt tomorrow. I'll hurt for the next week. But, you know, every shot that he took with that ladder, he wasn't trying to clinch up, block with his arms, or avoid the inertia in some way.
Mm-hmm.
He took every shot full on.
Yeah.
And now they have a classic match.
Yeah. I think that absolutely helps with the match, because if he doesn't sell if he doesn't sell all these moves well, does this match still be regarded as highly?
I can't imagine that it would, but I mean, I think that's a good point. If both those guys aren't doing their job at the level they did it,
yeah,
you're right. It's probably not up there. It's probably still a really fine match.
Yeah,
but easily the Hart match would overtake it as the best match of that card.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think both the sacrifices that those guys decided to make made that one for the ages.
Yeah.
So that is all that we have today for WrestleMania 10. Happy 10th anniversary, Zway.
Happy 10th anniversary.
This has been really fun. And next week we'll have for you WrestleMania 11, which features some interesting stuff. We have Diesel versus Shawn Michaels with Pamela Anderson involved in some way.
Yes, that's right.
And then this is also the famous one with Lawrence Taylor versus Bam Bam Bigelow.
Yeah.
And so we'll have that to talk about next time. But until then, I am Terry, the bad guy Catlett, along with my tag team partner, Jouet, the beast from the East Holt, and we will see you next time.
Bye.